Peace, peace, everyone. It's your girl, Sequoia Blue. And today, we have a special episode. We got Michelle in here, and she is a certified nurse practitioner. And also my mom, you know, so that's cool. Today, Michelle is going to talk about her journey getting a lumbar spinal fusion surgery. And when I tell you, because I was involved in the whole process, because I'm the only child and only family member out here where we're at, we were going through it. And I had to put this on the podcast today to help other people out there that maybe need a back surgery or maybe scared about getting a back surgery. And I just wanted to talk about it because I want people to know there's options. And sometimes you do need a back surgery. So Michelle's been in the game for a long time. Started off as a CNA, then she became an RN, then became a nurse practitioner. I mean, she's very versed in it in the medical industry. And she also has critical thinking skills to boot, which helps you when you're in that field. Michelle, thanks for coming on here on this beautiful Sunday.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Yeah, I wanted to let people know what to expect with lumbar fusion because some people don't know what to expect in the doctor, the surgeon doesn't really give you the information because they don't have time to sit with you long enough to go through everything that you need to know. So first of all, before you get a lumbar fusion, you need to make sure you have that bed that can raise and lower, or that you ordered a wedge from Amazon, a wedge to keep you sitting up in the up position, because you're really not going to be able to lay flat. And laying flat is what they want you to do after lumbar fusion anyway, but you can't because it causes pain. So you need that special bed or a special elevated pillow that puts you at least at 45 degree angle. Then you need a butt wiper.
Well,
if that's what you call it. But you order it from Amazon and it puts toilet paper on a stick.
Yeah.
So that you can reach yourself, because you're not going to be able to twist like you usually do or bend like you usually do, because it causes severe nerve pain, which is knives, pins, and needles just sticking in you. So you don't want to bend because that causes that nerve pain. Then you're going to need a bathroom in your vicinity of where you're going to sleep at. So if you can't get upstairs, you need to have a bed downstairs. Then.
And what about the bidet?
Oh, I did order a bidet for the toilet to help wash up after using the toilet, because you're not going to be able to reach like you want to reach.
And what's a bidet for people that don't know?
A bidet is an attachment that can go on your toilet stool that shoots water at your butt. Sorry to say butt, but it does do that. And it cleans you off, and you can order it on Amazon. They have prices ranging from $20 all up to $300, depending on which one you want. I, of course, got a $30 one, which works just perfectly. It doesn't have the drying modality on it, but it does have the water, and that helps get you clean. Then you're going to need a walker. You're going to need a wheelchair, because you're not going to be able to walk the way that you want to walk with the walker for long distances. Like for me, for instance, going to follow up doctor's appointments after the surgery, I'm unable to walk into the building. I have to use my walker, but I can't walk that far, so I have to use a wheelchair. So those are several items that you might need. You need some baby wipes and some wipettes.
Yeah.
That gives you a little sponge bath, because you're not really going to be able to cut the water off, or stand to the sink long enough to do anything. You need your toothbrush. You need a electric toothbrush, because it helps you to brush your teeth.
And a grabber stick, so you can grab what you need.
A grabber stick, because I dropped several items on the floor. And to avoid asking Shay, my daughter, to pick up.
And that's my nickname, y'all. My middle name's Lachey. So not a lot of you know me by Sequoia, but my family calls me Shay Shay. So
yes. So I would recommend Googling what you need before a surgery, so that when you get home, you'll be all set up.
Now let's rewind this back to the beginning. What made you want to get a lumbar spinal fusion from the jump? Like, what made you say, in this world of don't get a back surgery, everybody's scary, what made you say, I need to get this?
Well, for 3 years, I've been suffering with back pain, and my disc was out of alignment, and it was wiggling around. Every time I bend, move, or push or pull anything, it would click, clickety click, click, pat, pat. My daughter even heard it and said,
I'm a witness.
Sit down. Every other night or so, she said, just go sit down, because my back was popping out of control. And over 3 years, it got worse over time. I was trying to build it up with physical therapy, with injections from the pain clinic, and just with exercises at home, trying to improve it myself, because no one would recommend surgery because I was too young, of course, at 52 years old. I'm too young to get surgery, or they just think I don't need it. and they're always pushing physical therapy on you instead of actually recommending how to fix it, because I'm doing physical therapy and exercising on top of a disc that's unaligned. That's just making it worse.
Yeah.
Hello? That's making it really worse. So over 3 years, and just recently before the surgery, like the last 6 months, it got totally worse. I couldn't even walk straight. My mobility was just jacked. My daughter had to hold my arm or hold my hand just trying to go into a building.
And she felt embarrassed as well. Like,
and of course, I was walking like a retarded person. No offense to the retarded people or people that have inabilities to walk, but I was walking
like a limp. What's a limp?
Big ass limp.
Yeah.
The limp was so big that it was noticeable and people were looking like, what's wrong with her? And I know I shouldn't worry about people looking.
Yeah.
I just do the best I can. But it was a struggle to get inside of a building and to get to the first chair to get to. So trying to go to the casino, which I like to do, I had to get to the first chair and sit out and then wait a few minutes or play a little bit and then try to get up to the next chair. But I needed to stay by the door so that I could easily get out. So I was walking, but the disc was out of place, moving around and wiggling and stuff. So that made me unstable, unsteady, and in danger of falling down. And of course, I don't want to fall down because I don't have broken bones on top of this. So that's what led to me.
And that definitely makes sense. And then what was the next steps after that? I know that you had a process of where, you know, you had to get, you know, disability, and, you know, and that process was another situation. But after you got disability and was able to focus and find the right surgeon, how was that process when you met the new surgeon? What did you think about the facility and everything?
Well, my primary care doctor gave me a referral to the orthopedic surgeon. So I met the orthopedic surgeon, but the first time we encountered any situation with him, we got sent home because it was 15 minutes late to the appointment. The second appointment, he was 3 hours late.
Mm-hmm.
So we were on time and we had to wait for 3 hours. Mind you, my back is killing me. I'm sitting in these little tiny chairs in the waiting room and I have to wait 3 hours. The only reason why I waited 3 hours, which was another red flag, by the way. The first red flag was that I was late and he sent me away 15 minutes. Second red flag was that he made me wait for 3 hours in the next appointment. Third red flag is that he really didn't go into detail once I met him about what to expect after the surgery or what to expect during the surgery.
He didn't.
He just said, you're going to get two screws
L4.
And a plate at the L4, L5. He says, I don't think we need to do the L3 or 4 or 5 above it or below it because he believed that you can do well with one fusion. So that's what we decided to do. I didn't get a second opinion because over the last 3 years, I've seen several orthopedic surgeons. I even went to LA one time to get his opinion on
that. Didn't work out.
And that didn't work out because he thought I was too young and thought I should do physical therapy as well. And then I found another orthopedic surgeon who said, when you bend over and you can't walk no more, then come in for surgery. So I had a big ordeal 3 years.
Yeah, which is not good.
The procedure, which was a whole mess in itself. So meeting this orthopedic surgeon was like, phew.
It just seemed like the best thing.
Might be able to help me because no one else would.
Mm-hmm.
So meeting him, he was a nice guy. You know, he might have been from Africa. No offense to any African. Probably second generation African. Coming from LA, he works in Nevada now, and he lives in Nevada. And I thought he was a pretty cool guy. You know, he knows how to talk the talk.
And the reviews were good.
Allegedly. Where all the negative reviews went, but there was only positive reviews on his page. So I thought I was in good hands. So that's what led me to get.
And then, like, I forgot what the second appointment, that's when it was after we did the second MRI, I believe, when he was able to determine that you needed an emergency surgery.
Yeah, he said my nerves were being pinched and the disc was dislocated.
So explain that situation as well as I know it too, so I can explain it to y'all. That he wanted us to go and get admitted through the emergency room, which I think could have been avoided maybe.
Yeah, I should have went to the primary care doctor and let him assess me and do whatever tests he needed to do to make sure I was cleared. But this doctor, the surgeon, wanted me to go to the ER and get admitted through the ER. He says, just go in there, tell him you're in severe back pain and call doctor his name. I'm not going to tell you his name because I don't want to put it.
Yeah, we might. Front street. I mean, I want to tell on him, but y'all, we don't know, you know, somebody might hear this.
ER, which was not, you know, the way to do it. You're supposed to go to your primary care to get cleared for any surgery, not let him clear you through the hospital. But anyway, we went to the hospital. We got cleared for admission.
We were in the emergency room for a long time, though.
Over 12 hours.
Yeah.
In this little tiny chair.
Very uncomfortable.
And then sitting on the Jerry chair. We had to request a Jerry chair. Then we had to sit in the hallways because the hospital was full.
The hospital beds were full.
Yes, I know. I'm saying the hospital beds were full and there was no room for any patients, and it was just a hot mess. But by the time we got up to the floor, I was already exhausted and distressed and stressed out and everything from sitting in the ER for so long. And then he finally admitted me and they finally got a room. And the room was nice. It was a private room, but the nursing staff was short. Mm-hmm. They're short of nursing staff. So if you needed help, you better be able to talk.
So were you able to get to the bathroom easily? Or,
well,
you know, because I had to come in and help.
Yes. Well, originally before the surgery, I could get to the bathroom. Mm-hmm. They had all four rails up and had the alarm on my bed. So if you try to get out, everything's going to start ringing. And then you have to be able to reach the rails and put them down yourself, which I could not reach. So, oh my God.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Bed. Yeah. Before the surgery, y'all, I'm getting mixed up. But before the surgery, yes, the room was still uncomfortable.
Yeah, it was uncomfortable. And then you couldn't get the help you needed. It was just staff shortages, really. They didn't tell me they had staff shortages. They kept that to themselves. But I know.
And this was a highly rated hospital.
I know they had staffing resource issues because I worked in hospital all my life. So I already assumed that there was no help, why they couldn't help. But there was a board in the room where you could write your name on, where the nurse could write her name. But each shift didn't put their name on the board.
So wait, this is after the surgery?
This is still before the surgery.
It's still before the surgery. So
yeah, they still didn't write their names on the board. They still didn't tell me who they were when they came in the room, the staff.
Oh, okay.
And then the CNAs will come in and get your vital signs and run out because they don't want you to ask for anything. So that's pretty much before surgery. So what I'm trying to say is that you always need someone in there to be your support.
Like a hospital advocate.
Your advocate for yourself because they don't listen to you. So that's all before the surgery. So hot mess before the surgery, hot mess.
And what was it leading you to getting, when you get on the bed about to go to surgery room, what did they give you? Did they give you any medicine or anything like that? Calm you down?
Before.
I think you got some, she called me and told me you got some medicine to calm you down.
Well, probably something.
I think it was Xanax. Night. Okay.
Yeah, I might have got
before the surgery.
Because I was having panic attacks like crazy.
Yeah.
I couldn't even talk on the phone with someone longer than 2 minutes because I was having panic attacks all the time, just worried, just stressed out. Going into the surgery. So going into the surgery, they took me down. You know, everything seemed right. And I got back from surgery the first time. Okay. And I was able to go home in a couple of days, but I wanted to go home before the day the doctor wanted me to go home because the care was so bad in the hospital. No one would help you to the bathroom. They would run out as soon as they get in there as fast as they could. You could see smoke coming from their heels, really, because they were running so fast before you can ask a question. I'd be like, could you? And they already went out the door. So it's like, just can't ask for nothing. You just definitely need help in the hospital. And this is post-op. So I left a day early, which they didn't want me to leave. But I asked them for the discharge paperwork because I didn't want to leave unwillingly. I wanted to leave willingly with the right paperwork because if you try to leave the hospital and you think your insurance is going to cover it, they're not. You cannot leave without a discharge order. So I asked them for a discharge order and I told the doctor, I have to go home because there's no nursing staff after the surgery. They run out the room before you can ask them any questions. I actually had an incident of peeing on myself a couple of times because no one would come help after surgery. And I'm just getting out of fresh surgery. Seemed like somebody would come help me to the bathroom at least. But there was no help. They were short of staff. And I was just getting terrible ordeals. My medication that I was taking at home was changed to whatever they wanted to do in the hospital. So you were missing some things. Like I was missing my Tamoxifen. And I was missing my metoprolol and some other medications that you take on a daily basis that I was missing that I had to tell them about.
And so then what about the PeeWiki situation? They didn't change that. What was it called? That
thing? Airwick.
It's not called an Airwick. It's called a PureWick.
PureWick.
Yeah.
PureWick. Well, there's something called a PeeWiki, which they gave me in the hospital. And it's supposed to catch the urine without, it's not a Foley catheter, which goes into your bladder. It was just something to sit outside of your peri area to catch any urine. So instead of having me call for help, they said, just sit here all night and let it collect the pee and watch TV and have a good night, she says. So I'm like,
which is not good.
So they didn't want me to get up. So I was stuck in the bed, really, without getting up, which decreases your muscles. Your muscles can decrease in 8 hours. And it can dwindle down to not working at all if you do not move them, especially when you're on pain medication and other medications. Your body has to move, but of course they didn't have staff. They were trying to catch the pee because I've complained about peeing on myself, so they gave me this stick to catch the urine.
Yeah.
A hot mess because they didn't want to help me get up. And my daughter couldn't stay with me the whole time because we
got
dogs at home.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they need to be fed. And she has her own agenda, her own work schedule and all of this stuff. So it was really an ordeal.
It wasn't what I expected.
So we went home early with the
this was on a Friday.
The JP drain is still intact, and the JP drain is something that's put around the incision, underneath the incision, so that it can catch any excess blood that needs to come out. And it needs to be it can't be taken out any sooner, or it has to be taken out in a couple of days, or else it's going to cause severe nerve pain, which they told the nurses to take mine out, but no one knew how to do it on that particular floor.
Or get the wound. Remember, we were leaving out. She didn't know how to put the stuff.
She didn't know how to
wound.
Change the dressing. The nursing staff just acted like they didn't know anything. So I was trying to direct them in how to do things because they didn't know how. And it was just a hot mess. Everything didn't work out. Is there anything specific I can tell the people?
Well, here's something specific. So when you got home, you did not get the medication that you were supposed to have to be able to heal properly.
So I had to go back to the emergency room because I didn't have any pain medication.
3 days later.
Yep, 3 days later. The JP drain still in, mind you. The JP drain that's supposed to be collecting the blood that the nurses never emptied into the hospital in the first place. And only one nurse looked at the wound site in 3 days to see what it looked like. And the doctor, the surgeon came in, but he never looked at the wound.
And then the night before you went to ER, you talked to him on the phone and he's busy saying that he doesn't give those type of pills. Give you, Dilaudid. He says he don't have the license, but he lied.
He said he didn't have the DEA to prescribe any medication. But you're lying.
The whole surgeon
prescribed something prior to me having surgery, but okay, whatever.
And so that was crazy. And then so we get to the ER and you're in there and you're in pain. Then the doctor there, he gives you a shot of Dilaudid.
1 milligram.
And then he says, we're going to take you over to another hospital.
Yeah, then they say, your doctor, we spoke to him, and they want you to go to different hospital, because I told him I can't go back to that same hospital I went to because the care was so bad. So they sent me to another hospital, the sister hospital, same system, same everything, just a sister hospital, which was a little bit better than the initial hospital. So when I get there, they wanted me to do an MRI of the back to make sure the screws and plates was in place. So I got in this big ass MRI that looked like a spaceship, and I got claustrophobic in there, and I said, can you get me out now? He ignored me. I said, please get me out now. Please, I'm seeing stars. I'm going to pass out inside the machine. I can't do it anymore. 15 minutes later, while I'm stuck in a machine, it's yelling at me, bat, bat, bat. That's all you hear because the machine makes a lot of noise. I'm used to getting MRIs done in a off-site, off-hospital, like at
smaller one.
Yeah, small facility, which I'm used to a small machine. But this machine was a huge spaceship. There was a mean guy doing the procedure. He was so mean, he didn't have any patience. And he had to transfer me from the stretcher bed to a bed to get to the MRI. And he bumped my surgery site twice, trying to get in and out of that machine.
She was strapped.
But after 15 minutes of staying in the machine that I told him to get me out of, I come out of the machine and I tell him I can't do anymore. He says, now you need MRI with the dye. He says, I would have to finish up the MRI and use dye. I'm like, no, I don't want to use the MRI dye because it causes my kidneys to fail, causes my kidney numbers to go out of whack. And I said, I do not want my kidneys out of whack. And I said, and I had to use the word I refuse, because at first I was saying I do not want to. But I said, I refuse. In the name of Jesus, you're not going to do the MRI anymore. Take me back and tell my doctor I couldn't do it because I told you to take me out of the machine. The best MRIs is open MRIs for claustrophobic people, or think of volume before you go in.
Yeah.
That's my recommendation for that, because I stayed in there for 15 minutes and it was like a movie, like I was in a dream, like it felt like no one was listening to me. Then when he pulled me out of the machine, he says, I don't understand why you can't get this test done. Then he started cussing. He says, these motherfuckers keep ordering these tests and these bitches ain't ready. These motherfuckers keep ordering the tests and the bitches ain't ready.
Very scary.
He said that, and it was in the middle of the night. It was 1 o'clock a.m. And I was in there all by myself with this guy that is crazy, because he had to get up out of the bed because he's on call. So whenever you have an MRI after hours, the hospitals have on-call personnel, and he was one of them. He says, I got to get out of my damn bed to come in for this shit. And then he got me on the stretcher, hit my back again, getting onto the other stretcher, because he had to do it by himself, because of course there was no other staff to help him because it's in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
And they're probably short of staff.
And they were.
So he finally got me on the stretcher to roll me back to the
hallway.
To sit in the hallway because they didn't have any beds. So I was on a little small stretcher. I already had surgery.
And after about...
This is the second hospital.
Mm-hmm.
After about 4 or 5 hours, they finally got me a room.
Yeah, got your
and
room.
The doctor did recommend a private room for me, which was very nice, because all the other rooms was probably double beds. And the nurses told me, you're lucky you got a private room. And I'm like, I am? I didn't know that they had you know, double rooms, because coming from the East Coast, most of the hospitals on the East Coast have single beds, single rooms, where you don't have to share a bathroom or anything. It's just your room, which is very nice. Keep down germs and keep you from catching what the other person has. So I think it's a good idea that these hospitals here on the West Coast start trying to get individual rooms instead of trying to double up, because it's not working. You're spreading disease and you're spreading stuff around, and sharing a room is just difficult because, you know, you might have to be half naked one time. Then they're listening to everything the doctors say to you, and you're listening to everything the doctors say to them. So you just, there's no privacy.
Yeah.
It's just, and that's the privacy is a HIPAA problem, really. So we're in a HIPAA situation when you have double rooms. But anyway, he did do that. And so we came into the hospital through the emergency room, had to be transported to the emergency room from the ER in a bus that was in a little truck that was non-emergency truck, but it didn't have any medicine on board or nothing. It was just
two people
that was trained to drive you to the other hospital. So it was a bumpy road in the middle of the night at 1 a.m. But we finally got there, got the MRI, got cursed out. They got back in the hallway on the stretcher. Then they found me
in the room
4 to 5 hours later.
And how did you feel once you got to the new room?
I felt good when I first got there. But then the fact that this staff was better. They would come in, tell you their name right on the board and tell you who they are, and put my daughter's number up there for emergency calls. So they did use the board properly, and they did have better staff. But they still was a little laggy on trying to get medication and trying to get things done.
PCAT. Well, you know, explain to people the PCAT.
What's the PCAT? The airway.
Well, the thing that they gave you for the medicine is like a little machine. You push the button.
Oh, the PCA pump.
Yeah.
They came on and didn't give me a PCA pump. The first surgery, I didn't get a PCA pump either. The PCA pump is medication that's going in IV and is scheduled to go in at certain times. And or you can have a button to push when you need it.
Mm-hmm.
It just will not overdose you. Once you get to the limit, it stops. Every hour, there's a limit. So you can push the button all you want to, but Only when it's due can you have it anyway, but at least you have the button. So the PCA pump worked better for me for a couple of days.
And then what about the morphine and how, you know, gave you a bad reaction?
Oh my God, I had morphine. And morphine made me think I was the queen of the minions. I was the queen, and all the hospital staff was the little minions, and I was talking out of my head. I was delirious. So we had to get rid of the morphine because it didn't help for pain.
It didn't.
It just caused me to think I was in the grandiose situation, and I thought I was queen of the minions, and the doctor walked the king, and we're gonna take care of these minions here. And oh my God, my daughter said I was out of my mind. So we got rid of the morphine,
yes,
and replaced it with the lauded.
Yes, the lauded, and which worked better, correct?
Worked a little bit better. Worked a little bit better.
Yeah, worked.
I don't think anything was really 100% helping with the pain, really. So I was still in pain.
Yeah.
There was nothing I could do about it.
Enough.
And obviously nothing they could do about it. The surgeon ordered a referral for pain management doctor in the hospital, which she came by to try to manage the pain and try to get the right medication. But she did the best she could. She ordered Dilaudid and Gabapentin and some other things. But the Gabapentin was for nerve pain, and the Dilaudid was for the pain, any pain that you might have.
And then what about your balls? I said balls.
Balls. So bad while I was in the hospital.
Yeah.
That they had to give me Fleet Enema and Sinecot, Colate, all this stuff. And actually, it helped. It pushed out a whole baby.
Yeah.
Not a real baby. A doo-doo baby. I already have to say that. Excuse my...
Yeah, but hey, we're giving y'all the story.
Getting the deets. So, there was a big doo-doo out there. And the nurse that gave me the enema, I told him he's a baby daddy. And he thought it was so funny. And then everybody that came in, I said, I had a whole baby and I feel better. So taking these narcotics causes your bowels to back up so bad that you become constipated and nothing will come out. But I was able to have that baby. And then I had a water baby after that baby. And the nurse thought that something was running, thought the pee was being collected on the wall. But it was actually me having a water baby. I said, this is your second baby. Oh my God. So we had a good time with that nurse.
He was a nice guy.
And most of the staff was nice.
At the second hospital.
Just trying to help me out. Mm-hmm. And then one nurse told me, she says, you don't do no housework. You don't clean nothing because your skin is so beautiful. You just don't do no work. That's what she told me. And I was thinking to myself, just put the IV in and stop talking.
Well, everybody kept saying she don't look 52, and she doesn't. So we kept hearing that over and over and over again.
Yeah, you look so good. Your skin is so pretty. Like, you don't do no work. I'm like, oh my God, somebody help her.
Yeah, that was an interesting situation because it kept happening, y'all. So that was interesting. So you go home, you get ready to go home, get yourself together. Now this time the discharge was better because they gave you some medication so you can try to get home properly and get back on schedule.
Well, I found out during the discharge that the doctors don't talk to each other. You have a you have a hospitalist whose hospital medicine bear over your care, really. The surgeon, if he's affiliated with the hospital, will come to the hospital. So my surgeon was affiliated with the hospital and did come in to visit. However, he stood by the door or stood at the edge of the bed and never looked at the wound to check it. Not either day that in both hospitals. Doesn't even matter which hospital, either day, he never checked the wound himself to see how it was healing. The JP drain was taken out 2 days later than what it's supposed to. Now, I know I discharged myself for the first time because the hospital care was so poor that I had to get out of there. They were trying to kill me in there. I really had to get out of that hospital. It was so bad. They didn't even do the DVT protocols to help prevent from getting clots. I had to tell them about tell them about the machine. Please buy the machine for DVT prevention because I am a Black woman and we are at higher risk of getting clots. So the lady told me 2 nights in a row, we don't have that such a thing in here. We don't have those. So when the doctor came in the next day, I said, I told him about the DVT machine to prevent DVT protocols. Can you please get me a pump for my legs? So they finally found it, even though the first nurse said they don't have it. So they found it some kind of way out of the sky, out of the blue sky, and got it on me. So I was happy about that.
It was just a crazy story. So
the discharge was bad.
The first discharge or the second? The
first discharge was bad because they didn't know how to discharge. The nurses seemed to not know anything. Seemed like they were all new nursing students that just came out of school and wasn't being monitored. They just let them go amok. That's what it felt like.
It did.
I know they went to school and I know they were educated, but they just seemed not to know anything. So the hospital needs to do more training for these nurses when they come out to the floor, like what to expect for a certain patient. Because they couldn't take out the JP drain in the second hospital, which was a sister hospital to the first hospital I went to. So I was admitted to a hospital within a 2-week period.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yes.
The discharge from the first hospital was a hot mess because they didn't know how to do it. Didn't know what medication to put on. Didn't know.
So she had to go home in extreme pain.
I had to go home in extreme pain. And I wanted to get home because there's no help in there. You can't call anybody. And my daughter couldn't stay around the clock. And then I kept getting anxiety attacks from being in a different environment. When you're in a different environment than your home, you unconsciously can have these anxiety attacks that just pop up like out of the blue sky. So I knew I had to get home.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, they finally got the discharge paper ready for the first hospital, but it was missing medication, didn't have enough. And that's why I had to go to the ER and get readmitted back to the hospital.
Yeah.
So the second hospital, which is a sister hospital to the first hospital. I'm sorry, guys. My mouth is dry.
It's all right. Everybody, they be all right.
Medication, so just know that.
It's just, yeah.
So the second hospital discharge, the pain doctor, she did not know anything about anything because she did not converse with the other doctors. I said, you have to talk to each other when you're in the hospital. These doctors must talk to each other. If you have referrals of other doctors, please either read their notes and learn what they did so you can know what you can do.
And research outside of your certifications and degree.
Oh, yeah. Nurses, all the way down to the CNA, up to the nurse practitioner, to the doctors.
Mm-hmm.
You need to start reading and getting your CMEs done because you're behind. Your knowledge is failing and there's new knowledge every day. Please don't read your old books and try to learn something new. Read new books and learn something new and keep your education up. Train every day. Take a little CME course or something in the hospital. Train your nurses every month. Make them have classes on how to start IVs, how to be cordial to your patient, how to go in the room, what to write on the board. I mean, they just need education all around the clock.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree with that. I mean, it was a journey, y'all. I mean, it's been a journey. So when you got home after the second discharge, how was it coming home? Like, how was the vibe? I mean, your nerves was on fire. How was the medication?
Well, the pain was severe and we had to go to the pharmacy. Mm-hmm. We tried to get to the pharmacy. Nothing was ordered yet. The discharge hospital pain management doctor did not get the medication to the pharmacy in a timely fashion.
Mm-hmm.
It took a day to get the medication.
Mm-hmm.
So I suffered. I suffered with severe nerve pain, which feels like knives, pins, and needles going through your back down to your feet. And then I suffered with the pain of the incision site, which was minimal compared to the nerve pain because I've been moving back and forth and going to the bathroom and all that, trying to not bend. And because you can't bend, pull, or lift anything after the surgery, which I couldn't bend anyway because the nerve pain stops you from bending.
Mm.
So trying to bend down and try to wipe something or touch something or pick something up is out of the question. if you drop it, it's gone. That's how bad it was.
Oh my God. And then how was it when you were trying to speak to your surgeon and, you know, you were calling his assistant, we thought was a nurse, but she's actually a scheduler. How was it speaking to her?
Well, he had a scheduler doing messaging back and forth. And I think that instead of a scheduler or somebody that does appointments, should not be talking about any medical stuff because they don't have the knowledge. They don't know what you're talking about. So by the time the doctor was relayed a message from the scheduler, she didn't really know what she was talking about. She told him I couldn't walk. And that's not what I said. I said I have to use a walker to walk. But he's yelling out, go to the emergency room. Well, my insurance does not allow you to just go to the emergency room all willy-nilly because they might make you pay out of your pocket for going to the emergency room for no known reason. So I never reported back to the emergency room because I do not want to go back to the hospital. All I had was increased nerve pain, and all he had to do was increase the nerve pain medication and try to see if that would work. Try other options, but he said he doesn't do prescriptions. He doesn't do
pain management.
So he did refer me to pain management, and my primary care doctor referred me to pain management as well. So I haven't gotten there yet because it's only been 2 weeks since the surgery.
Well, he didn't even refer you, not the surgeon. He didn't say anything about it.
The surgeon was just out of whack. I think he's in trouble by the DEA or in trouble with his license or something because
I think
everything
so.
Is off with him. So I don't know how he's even working. He doesn't tell you any information. He doesn't seem to know anything. He wants to run you to the emergency room. I think he's trying to do another surgery on me, trying to get me back into the hospital. And I'm not going.
Yeah.
My CT scan that I had in the hospital was fine. It showed everything in place. And the CT scan is not as vivid as the MRI. The MRI shows tissue structures. The CT scan is more looking at hard structures like bones and joints, where the MRI is looking for tissues. So I couldn't get back in the MRI because of the ordeal that I had with the MRI being claustrophobic. So they had to do a CT scan, which came out normal.
And that was at the second hospital.
That was at the second hospital. So it came out normal. He said there's nothing to be done. He said if it was abnormal, we would have to go back to surgery.
Ugh.
And my mouth dropped to the floor. I'm like, what? Go back to surgery? Are you kidding me? You already went to my back one time and I'm finding out that you're a little loose quack. So I don't think I need to do any surgery with you anymore. So
that part.
I messed up on the research of trying to find a surgeon, but my primary care doctor sent me to Nevada Orthopedic and Spine Clinic.
That's the name, y'all.
Sorry, gave up the name. But this doctor put me through the rigmarole, and he still is.
Yeah.
Still is.
So we show up at the appointment.
Yeah, and Oh, my God.
And he says that we were on a schedule, and the scheduler evidently did not put it on the books and told us to come verbally. We go out there, and I get the wheelchair ready for her and everything. The day going.
In the chair. Get me going to the door. And then there's a scheduler running out with her hands up. I thought she was his nurse, but she ended up being the scheduler.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, she was relaying messages back and forth. So she came out and said, doctor said he can't do anything for you right now because you need an MRI. But you ordered me to come in on this day at this time, and then you forgot to do the MRI. So that's your fault. Just do you didn't see me follow up yet. So at least see me for follow up. At least look at the incision. At least see if you see anything abnormal on the incision line. But he says, there's nothing that I can do for you today. I'm like, well, this is the post-op visit, and it took everything for me to get outside. I have nerve pain and knives shooting in my butt, shooting in my thighs, shooting all down my leg to my feet, and I did everything I could to get out here today, and you send me home.
Yes.
So we didn't do a post-op follow-up with the surgeon yet. The only post-op I had was with my primary care doctor, and he was able to look at the wound and see that there was nothing going on. There's no signs of infection, no redness, no inflammation, and no draining. The site looked good according to the primary care doctor. So the primary care doctor had to do the follow-up. I still haven't had a follow-up after surgery since surgery with the pain management.
With the surgeon.
With the surgeon.
Mm-hmm.
So that didn't happen yet. So we're still in the process. We had the MRI. We had to go out and get another MRI, which I was able to get into that machine because it's outside of the hospital. It doesn't look like a big spaceship.
Yeah.
I was so scared because of the first ordeal that I had where the man would not get me out of the MRI 15 minutes. I was scared. So they had to pull me out in between little breaks and give me a sip of water. Mm-hmm. And I was able to make it. Thank God we had a good technician that day to do the MRI. Because she talked me through it. She said, you can do it. I know you can. We're going to pray for you. And you just have to be calm. And she put the music on and she put me back in. And I was able to make it through and breathe deeply. But from now on, I'm going to get open MRIs or MRIs that is for claustrophobic people because I have been scared to death and I can never do that again. So
yeah, and it's out there, y'all. You just got to ask for it. I mean, what a situation. So now the next steps is to see the surgeon again.
The surgeon for post-op. And now that he has an MRI, he can tell me how it's going. The MRI was done on a Friday. So today is Sunday. He hasn't called. He could have called from home and say, hey, I peeked at it. Everything is fine. You can do everything at your normal leisure or whatever. So I don't know what precautions to take now. The only thing I'm doing is walking to the bathroom and back. I don't want to do any extra exercise because I don't know if it's safe to do it because I don't know what the MRI results were. But I feel like the problem that I'm having is only nerve pain because the incision site, you know, hurts, but it feels like you done fell on your knee and scraped it. So that's not the problem. The surgery site is not the problem. The problem is the nerve pain.
And do you feel like because he couldn't get the cage in, do you think that caused more nerve pain? Because explain what the cage is for someone that might not.
Well, I have plates and screws put in. The cage is supposed to go into where the disc was at. It's supposed to replace the cartilage. It's supposed to stabilize your disc. It's supposed to take place of your disc. But he couldn't get the cage in. All he could get in was screws and plates. And he told my daughter that people can go without this cage. Sometimes that's normal if you can't get the cage in. So I had the procedure done without the cage. So I feel like he half-assed the surgery because he couldn't do it by himself. I think he needed some help and he didn't have any help. And he could have asked for help instead of just going in all willy-nilly half-assed on the job. If I'm supposed to have a cage, you should have put the cage in. That's how I feel. Do I feel like there's a problem? I don't feel like, I feel like because I did some research. Me and my daughter did some research.
Yeah, so what did you think about that?
So I found out that you can go without the cage. That the screws and plates should heal in place and stabilize the disc that's in there. So I'm just going to go and hope for that to happen. Now, will I have surgery sometime down the line? Maybe. I don't know. But I'm going to have to switch orthopedic surgeons now because I don't know if your license is right. I don't know if you're on punishment. I don't know if the state board is watching you or what, because you're telling me you can't write prescriptions. Your DEA is not there or whatever.
That don't sound right.
We just got a doctor who can't write prescriptions. The orthopedic surgeon can't write prescriptions. The primary care says your orthopedic surgeon is supposed to write all the prescriptions for the first 30 days for the follow-up. And then he's supposed to take over.
Yeah.
But that's not happening. The primary care had to write all the orders, had to get my walker, had to get all my
PT,
physical therapy, OT, CNA, had to get all that himself instead of the orthopedic surgeon because he didn't do it. So then I did talk to the surgeon one night because I was in such severe pain, and I paged his call service and I got him on the telephone, and it was a hot mess.
Yeah, it was a hot mess because he said, don't do PT. He was yelling at you a little bit, and I disagree with that. I do feel like you need some type of PT. The PT is not going to make you do anything you cannot do, and so she does need PT, and
so
it was okay.
Yeah, I had to explain to him the physical therapy is going to the bathroom with me and back and walking around a circle, which I have to do myself. So without physical therapy, you're not learning the right technique. So the purpose of physical therapy is not to make anything worse, especially if you have a good physical therapist. They know the limits. So I told him what to do. I said, I have to go to the bathroom every day. So show me how to go to the bathroom properly. Then I said, I have to get outside to the car. He showed me how to get to the car. I said, I had to explain this to this surgeon, because he didn't understand their definition of physical therapy or didn't know what they do. He must have thought that they were in here doing rigorous stuff, and that's not so. They do what you need to have them done, which is to go to the bathroom with my walker and then get outside with my walker. And that's what he's showing me. Every time he comes, he just watches me, give me new techniques, give me a little bit of exercise I can do in the chair, and that's it. There's no problem with physical therapy. So I had to tell my primary care doctor that he's trying to cancel physical therapy. Physical therapy is just for daily activities that I must do anyway. Because what you're pretty much saying is, if you don't want PT, you want me to sit in a chair, you want me to be incontinent, you want me to be, you just want me to do nothing. I don't understand.
Yeah, the guy, it seems like a total quack and he's aloof. I don't know what's going on. But, you know, please people, do your research. Don't just depend on a doctor. Go on Reddit, go on different platforms, see what other people are experiencing. Don't just go by what they say, because they may not know. Everybody don't know what you think they know, and that's what I've learned. So
then the doctors don't know what you think they know either, and then they don't do training to follow up on themselves, help themselves learn more. They just, oh my god, he's just there making money, just making money. And people without a brain and without any knowledge just sit there and just not say yeah. He wants a yep man, and I'm not a yep man. And the whole time I'm trying to talk to him, he's saying ma'am, ma'am, yep, every time I say something, so I can't say nothing. So when I go to the follow-up, whenever I can get there, because the scheduler did not make the appointment yet. So whenever I can get there, I'll find out Monday what day I go there. And I'm going to call before I get there to make sure he's not 3 hours late. And I'll make sure I get there 15 minutes earlier than the time scheduled. So that way, we won't have any problems. Because this last trying to get to him, and then him sending me away was ridiculous. When you could have checked my wound or did something, because you never seen my wound. Anytime after surgery, you never looked at it. Not once. So hopefully, Monday, you can look at it. There's also some sutures left in the procedure that needs to be taken out. And he never mentioned that. The scheduler, who doesn't know anything, she shouldn't even be the scheduler talking to the doctors and the nurses. Mm-mm. She should just be doing scheduling. His nurse should be calling. But never once did anybody call me after surgery to ask me how I was doing until I called into them, started asking them questions about my MRI and about how to get scheduled and all of that. So now the MRI is done. I need a follow-up with the surgeon. So I'm going to try to get that done. And then I made an appointment with my primary care doctor too, just to follow up to make sure I have the right medications, make sure I have some kind of pain medication on board. Mm-hmm. So we're going to see how it works out, y'all.
Yes.
It's still up in the air. It's questionable. Everything is, it's like a movie.
It's like a movie. So part two is coming. So just keep in mind, if anybody's interested to follow this journey, follow the show's journey, part two is coming. We'll let you know how it goes. We're going to continue to let you know how it goes, because I think people need to learn about this and know what to say, know what to ask for. Any final words you want to say before we close out? Because I know you want to get some rest, but you want to share anything else?
I just want to say that I hope my follow-up goes well with the surgeon, and I hope the MRI, I hope the screws and plates are in place, because I cannot let this doctor go on my back again. I have to switch surgeons, and you can't switch surgeons for 12 months, it seems like, in this state, after a procedure. So, but that's just for some doctors that are scary. If you find the right doctor that you can transfer to, that says yes to you, then that's fine. But there's some doctors out here that won't touch you for 12 months if you're switching doctors. So we'll have to see how that goes. And we're going to check this MRI out and see if that goes right. And hopefully it does. Then I can know for myself that it's just nerve pain. It's not the screws and plate. The screws and plate seem to still be in place, because when I move, I don't hear any clicking or any clacking or anything like that. And it doesn't feel out of place from what I'm feeling. I feel the incision site has some pain in it, but not severe. The nerve pain is what's severe. And I know that's normal after a lumbar fusion, that nerve pain is normal. Mine just got worse. And I needed a higher dose of the medication. That's for nerve pain. That's
just
all I need.
Pain management. We just
could not do anything. So I still have a pain management clinic appointment coming up. And I have my primary care appointment coming up. So we're going to follow up with the
pain, the pain
on the next video.
Yep, we're gonna follow with the next information, and we're gonna let you know what the pain clinics is and all that good stuff. So we're gonna follow up, y'all, and let y'all know what's going on. And y'all,
stay vigilant
out there. Please ask questions. Don't think everybody knows what you know. Explain in detail, ask questions, and stay safe out there, y'all. And subscribe and share. It's free and it helps us grow. All right, stay safe out there, and thanks for listening. Thanks, Michelle, for coming on.
Thank you.